It's the WGN Wake Up Service. Good morning. I'm Bob Surratt. 5:11. Does chocolate have a lot of caffeine in it? I had like a half of a chocolate bar last night. I'm going to oil the microphone. I had a half of a chocolate bar before I went to bed last night, and I was doing a lot of tossing and turning. Is there a lot of caffeine in chocolate? Do we know? I know there is some.
Yeah. I usually have a piece of chocolate after dinner, and it doesn't affect me.
A piece?
Yeah, a little piece.
Well, I had a half of a chocolate bar. It was pretty big.
Was it dark chocolate or milk chocolate? Because dark. I think that could, yeah, see, I think that might.
Have a little more, yeah.
I just Googled it real quick, and yeah, it could have as much as 12 milligrams of caffeine, which would be, what, about a half cup of coffee, right?
I shouldn't be eating chocolate bars before bedtime.
Or pair it with red wine. A lot of people do that.
Like me.
Well, I wasn't naming any names.
No, not at all. It's the best combination there is.
I had it with an apple. It was pretty tasty.
That is bizarre.
I thought it was kind of healthy. Yeah, an apple and chocolate. Yeah.
Well, the apple offsets the calories and stuff in the chocolate, right? That's the way that works.
It's a load of sugar, though. It really is. I mean, we think of fruit, bananas, and apples as being very healthy, and it, because it's natural sugar, but it's sugar. So
don't go telling people not to eat fruit now or chocolate.
No. No. And yesterday, I know we were talking about the gloom of January, and somebody had a report that the third Monday in January is the day people feel the lowest. And I was feeling it yesterday. And then I worked out. I did a little weight workout, and it was like magic. Then I felt great. Of course, then I ate the, you know, half of a chocolate bar.
Because you worked out. You felt you deserved it.
Yeah, right. Well, I worked up an appetite. And in a moment, we'll take our first caller to get on the radio and award a prize that could be you at 312-981-7200. First, from WGN-TV, Courtney Guzman is on the impeachment watch. So, morning, Courtney. How you doing today?
Hey, good. How are you, Bob?
Waking up. And today's a big day in Washington.
It is, for sure. So this is essentially day one of the impeachment trial. This is a day when senators are coming. They will decide the rules. There will be a lot of back and forth. Senator Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, yesterday issued a preliminary set of rules. And, of course, Democrats were not too pleased with those rules. They will have to sit and debate and vote and hash out how this trial is going to come. Or how it's going to run, I should say. And as you know, Mitch McConnell has already said he was planning to work with the White House to come up with these rules and make this a very speedy trial in the hopes of an acquittal for President Trump. Now, interestingly enough, President Trump is not even in the country right now. He's in Switzerland speaking at the World Economic Forum. In fact, he's speaking right now. I was listening to his speech, and he's been touting about what a great job America's economy has done over these past couple of years, particularly since he's been in office. We did hear from Trump before he started speaking moments ago, and he addressed the fact about why he chose to go to this economic forum out of the country rather than stay for his impeachment trial. And he said he feels like this is a witch hunt. It's disgrace, and it's very important to him to be at this forum because, again, he is speaking, and he feels like he wants to do some more business with business and world leaders. So today will be very interesting to see how this process played out in terms of the rules, because they have to establish these rules first. Mitch McConnell has already said in his rule that there will be 2 days for opening statements for the House committee, the impeachment committee, to present their case on this impeachment trial. And already Democrats are not happy about that either, saying that by the time they make the crux of their statements and the case on the impeachment, that will come in the late midnight hours. Many senators will be very tired when they're listening to this, and you're talking about the general public. For those networks that are televising it, much of the general public will not even be awake to hear these arguments being made. So a lot going on in Capitol Hill and even Switzerland. We're keeping an eye on it on WGN News this morning.
And it's 4 days for the opening arguments. So Chicago time everything gets underway, noon, correct?
Yes, yes, at noon. And, of course, we will have that coverage for you live this morning on WGN.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the update there, Courtney Guzman, WGN-TV. And off you go on TV. We'll be watching for you. Thanks, Courtney.
All right. Thanks so much, Bob.
We'll talk to you. It's 5:22, and we have the first caller to get on the radio. It's you, Nancy, and Addison. Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Bob, and welcome to WGN.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. What are you doing up at this hour?
Walking my neighbor's dog. But a fun fact, when you were on Fox and you used to do first birthdays, my daughter was on there 27 years ago on Valentine's Day.
So is that right? For the 1 year birthday, right?
Yep, the one. Yeah, you send in a picture, and then you and Allison Rosati talked about it.
Oh, that was on Channel 5. Yes, way back.
Oh, okay, Channel 5.
Yeah, before it went to Fox, and named the show Fox Thing in the Morning to just stick it to the people at Channel 5.
Very good.
In a fun way, of course. Yes. Oh, that was 27 years ago, did you say?
Mm-hmm. 27. She'll be 27 on Valentine's Day.
Wow. Well, good for you. Now, why are you walking your neighbor's dog? How'd you get stuck with that job?
They're in Hawaii for over a week.
Oh, man.
So we got to shovel snow and walk the dog. But we love the neighbors, love the dog.
Good timing for that trip to Hawaii, huh?
Yes, very good.
And, well, you're out in the cold this morning. It's supposed to warm up a little bit later on, but it's pretty chilly out there at the moment. And when you get done with that, Nancy, what happens on your day this Tuesday?
Then I go work out and go to work.
What do you do?
I am a teacher's assistant at an alternative school.
Well, good for you. We need more folks like you. Let's see. What is today? The 21st of January. And you get a prize for being the first caller on the radio, Nancy. How would you like a desktop indoor weather station?
I'd love one.
Well, you got one. Brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. And what neighborhood are you walking the dog in? Where are you exactly?
In Addison.
In Addison, right. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're out west of Chicago.
And all the sidewalks have been shoveled, so it's lovely. It's a lovely walk.
I did that this morning before I got to the station. I went out there and took care of that. Just a little another community service we provide here at WGN.
So excellent. Glad
you're enjoying it. All right. Hang on, Nancy. We'll be sure to get the information we need to get you that weather station. And thanks for listening and for
calling in.
All right. You can be the first caller on the radio and win a prize tomorrow. Make note of our number, 312-981-7200. While we're at it, if you'd like to get in touch with us, that's also the number for text, 312-981-7200. Email bobshow@wgnradio.com. bobshow@wgnradio.com. It's 5:25, and it's going to be a big night tonight at the United Center, isn't it, Dave, with Coach Q returning and the Blackhawks hot, and they need all the wins they can get. Is this the last game before the break?
It is the last game, so they're going to be off for quite some time, everybody except Patrick Kane, because he's going to play in the All-Star game on Saturday night in St. Louis, which we will bring you here on WGN Radio, but should be a special night. Joel Quenneville, his legacy in Chicago, I think, and in hockey is well-known and well-established, and he's coming in here with a hot team of his own. The Florida Panthers got a big road win last night. They scored 3 goals in the third period to win at Minnesota. So they're trying to get themselves into a playoff spot, and the Blackhawks trying to do the same. Should be a fun night. The Blackhawks are great, Bob, at these sorts of homecomings, reunions. I know there were, any time you part ways with somebody who's been a big part of your organization, there are always going to be some hard feelings, but I think that the Blackhawks made it clear when they let Quenneville go that he was an important part of their history, and I'm sure that they will have a warm welcome for him at the United Center tonight. Not just the fans. I mean, the fans, it goes without saying.
Sure.
I think the Hawks as well.
Yeah. I'm sure they'll have a nice video tribute on the scoreboard.
I'm sure.
Yeah, it's going to be a good night. And you can hear it on WGN Radio, and that coverage starts
early. I think Roe is going to be out there, I'm pretty sure, starting at 3 o'clock. And then the pregame at 7, and the puck drops at 7:30.
We'll be listening. 5:27 right now. Quick break, and then the news update coming at 5:30. Agribusiness update now with Orion.
Good morning. After 3 days of no trade at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, a quick refresher on where we'll start this trading day. The April lean hog contract, $74.10 to start the day. The February live cattle will start the day at $126.35 a hundredweight, and January feeder cattle will start the day at $145.35 a hundredweight. And it was a good day Friday for the corn market, particularly because corn went up 3.7%, bargain buying into the market, and good strength in wheat and soybeans. The market day today will start with the March wheat contract at $5.71 a bushel, March corn at $3.89.5 a bushel, and March soybeans at $9.29¼ a bushel. Today, the American Farm Bureau Federation will end its annual convention. Today's delegate session will be determining policy for Farm Bureau for the next year. And one of the highlights, of course, the appearance of President Donald Trump. Third year in a row, he's been there to speak to members of the American Farm Bureau. But there was sad news also at the convention with the announcement of the death of Bonnie Duval, wife of American Farm Bureau President Zippy Duval, who lost her courageous battle with cancer. That was a sad part of the convention. Fairly quiet for the rest of the week on the meeting calendar. The National Livestock Show in Denver, Colorado underway. That's the big event for cattlemen. And then coming up next week, the convention of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. That's Ag Biz. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
I always feel like I'm in the Midwest when I hear Orion. 5:42 almost. Have you heard the stories already about the prices for Super Bowl tickets? I guess because of this matchup, they're a little bit higher than normal. Generally speaking, the average Super Bowl ticket goes for between $4,000 and $5,000. The price varies depending on the matchup and when the tickets are purchased. The price of those Super Bowl tickets typically falls as the event nears. But this is a good one. And, you know, you hear about those crazy ticket prices in the tens of thousands of dollars. I don't know who buys those. But also the fact that it's in Miami is going to help.
Right. I would think so, yeah. Not a bad destination.
You want to be there in January. Mm-hmm. But this matchup has everybody talking, and I don't know what we're going to be talking about every day for 2 weeks. We'll find something, though, won't we?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there won't be a lack. And when the teams get to Miami next week, then things really get cranked up.
Right, when they interview everybody, media day,
yeah,
TV day, radio day, yeah. It's going to be fun. And even people like me who lost interest in the NFL completely when the Bears were out of it are coming back in the fold now. We are.
The teams from WGN Radio and WGN TV invite you to the biggest stair climb in Chicago, the Fight for Air Climb, presented by United Healthcare at Presidential Towers on Sunday, March 8th. Your first step, visit fightforairclimb.org to register, and then start training. Why do we do this? Because the fight for clean air and healthy lungs belongs to all of us. You and your team can climb 1, 2, 3, or all 4 towers. That's 2,340 steps. The American Lung Association, Fight for Air Climb at Presidential Towers.
I was thinking of that last couple of days because the elevator from the parking garage to the lobby of the building was out of service, so we had to take the stairs up, I think, 2 flights.
Yeah.
You know, it was a pretty good
You're
workout
okay?
for me. Well, yeah, I was breathing heavy.
You, hey, we have room for you on the team. You should climb with us.
Yeah, come on, come Bob. On.
That's why I started.
You're in great shape.
I started working out a little more yesterday. Let's see if I can get ready for it. Here's what I am getting ready for. Buying a Chick-fil-A franchise. And anybody want to go in on this with me? In America, the majority of fast food restaurants are not owned by the corporation itself, but by franchisees, individuals who pay for the right to use a brand name. Instead of buying and developing new properties with their own money, most national chains will allow a party or individual, a franchisee, to front the development bill and take a stab at ownership in exchange for a cut of the sales. Many people dream of buying a fast food franchise, but few can afford it. Costs a lot of money. Let's see, upwards of $2 million usually to develop, build, and buy the right to open a McDonald's or a KFC. Many chains won't even look at your application unless you have a net worth of $1 million and $500,000 readily spendable cash sitting around. But there is an exception. A franchise at Chick-fil-A, one of America's oldest, largest, and most profitable chains, can be yours for just $10,000. This is interesting. And it turns out that it's hard to get, but doesn't cost a lot of money for a Chick-fil-A franchise. No minimum net worth requirement, has the lowest franchise fee of any chain, $10,000. It has by far the lowest total investment cost for a franchisee, and it charges the highest royalty fee. The reason for this, unlike other franchise models, Chick-fil-A, not the franchisee, covers nearly the entire cost of opening each new restaurant, which, according to its financial disclosures, runs from $340,000 to $2 million. The franchisee only pays that $10,000 franchise fee. See, I'd be interested just for the milkshakes. The sandwiches are good, but I really like the soft serve ice cream at Chick-fil-A.
Yeah,
big
really
proponent
good.
Of that. Yeah.
Are you going to be open on Sundays then?
Well, no, you can't be, can you?
Well, no, you can't. But maybe as a franchisee owner, well, I suppose they would not make an exception. But
no.
That'd be a good way to make some extra cash.
Chick-fil-A,
if you were open on Sunday.
Yeah, they pay for and retain ownership of everything, real estate, equipment, inventory. In return, it does take a much bigger piece of the pie. A franchise like KFC takes 5% of sales. Chick-fil-A takes 15% of sales and 50% of any profit. But apparently this financial model makes sense for Chick-fil-A because they do so well. At $4.2 million per store, their average revenue is the highest of any fast food chain in America, dwarfing KFC and McDonald's. And that is especially impressive considering all Chick-fil-A restaurants are closed on Sunday. Based on these figures, Chick-fil-A's 15% royalty alone, not including its 50% cut of profits, might work out to around $600,000 per store per year. And remember, they own the property and the equipment. Here's the catch, though. According to Chick-fil-A, 60,000 people apply to be operators every year. 60,000 apply. And you know how many are selected? 80. That's it. A 0.13% acceptance rate. It's harder to become a Chick-fil-A franchisee than it is to get into Stanford University or get a job at Google or even become a special agent for the Secret Service. I am going to be impressed now with any employee I see at Chick-fil-A, especially the owner. Chick-fil-A operators go through a screening process that often lasts months. I'd like to get a hold of what the questions. What could they possibly do? I mean, grill them on chicken parts? I don't know.
Yeah, how do you study for that interview?
You wing it.
Yeah, good one, Dave. Let's see. They talk about one operator in Atlanta had to complete 10 rounds of interviews, write 12 essays, and provide a copy of his high school transcript.
What?
If they did that here, none of us would be working at WGN. Once selected, this person in Atlanta went through an extensive multi-week training program. That's after he got through the rest of it. And the training program covered everything from menu education to employment law. In lieu of wealthy investors, Chick-fil-A selects franchisees who are involved in their local communities. The company's aim, according to a spokesperson, is to find people who are willing to be highly involved in day-to-day operations. It's not a stated requirement. Adhering to Christian values also doesn't hurt an applicant's chances. So that's quite a quite a process. 10 rounds of interviews, 12, you have to write 12 essays and provide your high school transcript. That reminds me
and
later.
Then you go through all that. What happens if you don't get it?
What about your college transcripts? Yeah, I guess they don't care if you went to college. It wouldn't matter, but.
I guess not.
You would think, after all that. Then you get a blessing by the Pope.
Yeah.
If you make it through.
Yeah, this is quite amazing. I actually had, the last time I was at Chick-fil-A, I had the grilled sandwich, because supposedly that's healthier, right? Because it doesn't have the batter on it. But it was good. It was a little salty. And they've got to be putting a lot of sugar in that bun, because it tastes too good. It really does. And I'm sure McDonald's does the same thing. But again, my recommendation at Chick-fil-A, soft serve ice cream, soft serve cone. I like that. This application process at Chick-fil-A reminds me, a little later on, we're going to be talking to Scott Kleinberg, who's our social media expert. He used to write the syndicated column out of Chicago. I think it was called So Social. And Scott checks in every now and then to update us on things we need to know about Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Pinterest and all the rest. And we're going to be talking today about something really interesting with him. Scrubbing your social media. People who are applying for jobs now have to be mindful that prospective employers are looking at things like your Facebook posts in the past. So if you want to change what they see and alter your Google search results a little bit, there are ways to do it, and Scott will be talking about that with us this morning at about 7:40 or so this morning. So if you're thinking of applying to get a Chick-fil-A, you may want to listen to Scott's advice on scrubbing your social media first. Let's see. I have an update, by the way, on those Super Bowl ticket prices that we were talking about a few minutes ago. Where is it here? On the secondary market, where is it? According to SeatGeek, the current average price of a Super Bowl ticket is going for $9,590. The current lowest ticket price is $5,727, and the largest is $70,153 if you're looking to go to that game in Miami.
Is there anything that you would pay $70,000 to go see?
Well, yeah, maybe if somebody got me through the Chick-fil-A vetting process, I'd come up with that kind of money to get a franchise. The ticket prices for this year's Super Bowl, higher than they have ever been. The next highest priced Super Bowl was when the Patriots faced the Eagles. That average ticket price was $5,373. So there you go. StubHub also reporting tickets listed at, on the cheap side, about $4,600, and on the expensive side, the most expensive Super Bowl ticket on StubHub right now, $20,925.
I've got tickets here. It's club level seats. This is on one of those ticket apps.
Mm-hmm.
Two seats together, club level, row 17, for the two tickets, $59,400. Should I click yes?
Yeah, click yes and write in
Bob
WGN.
Sarat's credit card number.
Well, I would go with Nextstar WGN. Okay. Yeah, they'll take care of all the billing.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Tuesday, January 21st, investors in the Asia area concerned about this SARS-like outbreak. That's impacting prices in Asia and in Europe this morning. Home prices will be the focus of U.S. investors as they come back to work this week after yesterday's holiday. Home price sales in the spotlight tomorrow, existing home sales as well. Today, earnings from Capital One, IBM, Netflix, and Chicago-based United Airlines. And that's could move the market today on this Tuesday, January the 21st.
Coming up on 6:11, I think I tweeted this yesterday at Bob Sarat, and I'm getting some interesting response. Here's the tweet. Starting my day, it was a picture that was posted. I think we posted this on Facebook And then this tweet read, starting my day preparing a daily cocktail of apple cider vinegar, lemon juice, and cayenne pepper at 3:30 in the morning every day before going to work on WGN AM 720 and WGNradio.com. One of these days I'll talk about it on the air. Yeah, this is this drink that my wife makes that she says is very healthy if you have it first thing, and then don't drink anything else for about 15 minutes. It's just like a capful of apple cider vinegar and a little more than a capful of lemon juice, fresh lemon juice, and then a shake of cayenne pepper, and then a little bit of water. And then you have that, and it's supposed to be very healthy. Doesn't sound good, does it?
How is it?
Yeah, what does it taste like?
It tastes, the cayenne pepper and lemon
and
really.
Vinegar?
Yeah, it really wakes you up. So Fred Winston responded to this tweet, and he said, I know it's healthy, but sounds disgusting. A donut in the car and a fresh pot of radio station coffee won't work? Well, I'm trying to stay healthy with these hours. That's the concept. But apparently a number of people are into this vinegar. And you got to get the vinegar that I'm trying to remember what it says on the label. Something like Mom's something. You know what I'm talking about? Anyway, it's a special kind of vinegar that you have to get. And then the cayenne pepper, and you squeeze some lemons, add a little water, and there you go. Sounds delicious, doesn't
it? We were trying celery juice first thing, and then it was the same deal. You couldn't drink anything else for, like, the next half hour.
Right, yeah.
It didn't really wake me up.
Well, and, you know, the holistic doctors and a lot of the Eastern medicine people say in the wintertime, don't be drinking anything cold. Drink hot liquids this time of year. And then it makes sense. And then in the summertime, you drink your cold beverages. But I've been trying to hold off on the hot tea, in my case, until after this lemon drink. But judging by the responses here on social media, this is not sweeping the country.
You're not starting a trend?
No, I don't think so. Excuse me, hang on 1 second before Mary's traffic. It's apple cider vinegar with mother. That's what it says on the label, thanks to the 641 texter. Got it? Okay, I know you're going to run right out and buy it now,
yeah,
Mary.
Yeah, for sure.
Good morning. Well, good morning, everyone.
Now the top six at six with Bob Saras on WGN Radio.
Stories that you need to know about in the morning. We do this every day at about 6:18. Brought to you by Bragg Organic Apple Cider Vinegar, raw and unfiltered with the mother. Yes, I just went out and made that sale during the break. Here's the top story everybody's talking about. President Trump's impeachment trial starts today, 12 noon Chicago time. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell will give each side a total of 24 hours to present their arguments in the president's trial, but the time must be confined to 2 working days, according to the text of his organizing resolution. The proposal also suggests that none of the evidence collected as part of the House's impeachment inquiry will be admitted automatically. Instead, according to the text, the Senate will vote later on whether to admit any documents. Arguments will begin at noon Chicago time, setting up several long days for Senate jurors. Democrats protested that the rules would push arguments to late hours and make it harder to introduce evidence. The rules do allow a vote on whether witnesses will be called to testify.
Stand by for news.
I like that. I think that's working. The mayor of Oak Brook Terrace has resigned during an ongoing federal corruption process. Tony Ragucci stepped down Friday. He was among several elected officials that politically connected contractors involved in an investigation to a red light camera company, according to the Tribune. The company called Safe Speed has been a big political donor of his. The Trib also reported that Ragucci used $30,000 in campaign funds to pay for his defense. He was elected mayor in 2009.
Two. Now, page two.
A pot shortage that has marred the rollout of recreational weed sales in Illinois is also affecting the state's medical marijuana program, despite promises from state lawmakers and protections built into the law, leading some to question why more wasn't done to ensure patients could continue to get the marijuana they need to treat their conditions. Industry experts say it takes 16 weeks to grow, harvest, dry, and package cannabis product. The executive director of Cannabis Business Association of Illinois says the reason for the shortages is that the state has only 21 cultivation center sites in Illinois.
This is Chicago.
This is Chicago? Is that what he said? Okay. Continuing our top six at six here. A new exhibit at Adler Planetarium inside the Atwood Sphere teaches stargazers to protect the dark sky. Chicago's night sky shows how lights are designed and how they can be designed to preserve our night sky. According to the planetarium, in a truly dark sky, you can see up to 4,500 stars. But in big cities like Chicago, due to light pollution, you can only see 35. Oh, boy, that's depressing. Only 35. You know, when I was a kid, my dad always took me to the planetarium. Loved the planetarium, and it's still a great place to go. I want to get one of those seats, one of those chairs they have in the planetarium theater to nap in. That would be great. And do you remember, by the way, when the lights switch from the sort of bluish, whitish street lights in Chicago to the sodium vapor, and the whole city was then orange? And aren't they, I think they're switching back again away from those orange lights, which supposedly gave off more light, so made the city safer. But I think they're changing them again.
It seems like when you fly in at night, it doesn't look as orange.
Yeah, right? Right, exactly. Yeah, so there's your light bulb update in the top six at six.
Page three.
Fitbits have been used for years to help people improve their lives, and sometimes that goes beyond tracking workouts. In the past, they've been able to detect early signs of heart problems. Now, researchers say there's another off-label way of using them. They could help stop the flu from spreading. A new study analyzed de-identified sensor data, that's data from which all identifying information has been removed, from 200,000 people who used Fitbits between 2016 and 2018. Of the study participants, about 48,000 wore a Fitbit device consistently during the study period. The average Fitbit user was 43. 60% of participants were female. The researchers used Fitbit data, specifically elevated heart rates and increased sleep levels, which can be markers of the flu. If a participant's weekly average resting heart rate was different from their normal and their weekly average sleep period was unusual, then they were flagged as abnormal. Did I do six stories? I didn't?
Dome it may concern.
Oh, I like that. Thank you, Paul. Yes, I forgot Prince Harry. He's back in Canada with Meghan. Also, their baby son Archie up north now as the family begins their new life after a whirlwind couple of weeks. The Duke of Sussex arrived on Vancouver Island last night on the heels of that historic week in London in which he met with the royal family, leading to Queen Elizabeth announcing over the weekend that he and Meghan will no longer use their Royal Highness titles or receive public money. Now, I'm hearing, and you've probably heard this too, and reading that they actually stand to make more money by splitting off with all the deals they're going to be involved in with. And I think they're already talking to the Disney people about something. So I don't think we're going to be having to do a tag day for Harry and Meghan. And you got a feel for them. I mean, how hard a decision this must have been and what they're doing. And now, I mean, even though they have sort of cut the royal ties, or many of them, still, though, the focus on them, I mean, the paparazzi is not going to leave them alone just because of what they did now. So good luck to them.
And that's the way it is.
This has been the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Sirott on WGN Radio.
Since they're in Canada, is it only a matter of time before we see Harry and Meghan at a hockey game? I mean, that's going to be fun. They're going to have to do that, right? I mean, if they're living in Canada.
It's like
a religion there.
Sure, I would think so. Yeah.
And also, let me slip this in as a bonus item in the top six at six. Do you have DVDs at home? Do you still use them? Do you buy them? I mean, everything's streaming now, right? Well, guess what? The DVD may be making a comeback. The market for DVDs and Blu-ray discs has been on life support for years, as streaming has become the technology of choice for home video. In the last decade, the U.S. market for physical discs has gone from a more than $10 billion business in the U.S. to roughly a third of that in terms of consumer spending. But studios are not ready to give up on the format just yet. Two of the major studios, Universal and Warner Brothers, have just proposed an unusual plan to stay in the business of selling those discs. The studios announced a proposal for a joint venture that, if approved by regulators, will handle North American distribution for DVDs, Blu-rays, and 4K UHD discs for new releases, library titles, and television shows. The idea is to combine resources to continue selling discs while saving money. The joint venture is expected to operate for up to 10 years, according to a news release. And I was just in the store the other day looking at DVD decks. They cost like about, you know, $10 now. Yeah. You can get a good one for really cheap. But now maybe there'll be a resurgence. I don't know. I mean, I like the discs because you get your bonus material, your extra material that you can't always get when you're streaming, right?
Right, right.
And I think the quality on the DVD is a little better than many of the streaming services.
Do you have Blu-ray?
Yeah, I do. I think I've watched one, you know. That hasn't really taken off like they thought it would, right? I mean, I went to a store to try to, you know, we recently downsized and purged a lot of junk, and I found that there is very little market for DVD players, DVD discs, right? Nobody cares about them anymore, but... You know, we'll see what happens with this. I don't know. Let's catch up on your feedback and open up the Bob Surratt mailbox here. Email bobshow@wgnradio.com. This is from Jeannie. Hey, Bob, I'm a longtime GN listener and was a big fan of Wally Phillips and Spike Odell. I like your love of Chicago, both the city and the band. She must be referring to the little piece of music we play when we come on here at 5:08 a.m. Friends and family have said they don't like you in that morning drive spot, but I do. Keep up the good work. Talk about a backhanded compliment there. And you can stop texting me pictures of Bragg's organic apple cider vinegar with the mother. Thank you very much for reminding me of what I'm drinking every morning. Some other texts. From 815, you need the Apple AirPlay app on your TV. Yes, I've been talking about how I've been struggling to watch that show, The Morning Show, on Apple Plus, and I haven't figured out how to get it yet. If your television doesn't have the option, just buy an Apple TV box. It's $149 on Amazon, and use screen mirroring. Now, I know you can do that. I'm trying to get it the other way.
Yeah, I don't want to have to spend that just to watch that one show.
No. I'm working on it. Let's see. 773 says, winning Hawks tickets is the best. I won tickets to my first Hawks game from WGN years ago, and now I'm a full-season ticket holder. Well, that's what we like to hear. 219, there is no way any Blackhawk fan would boo Coach Quenneville. Well, of course not. It's not.
Who said they would?
Nah, he's expecting to get a great reaction.
Yeah,
and they'll have a little tribute on the video board, I'm sure. It's going to be a big night tonight. And his how is his team doing?
Very well.
Are the Panthers
very well? The Panthers they won last night. They scored three goals in the third period at Minnesota. They got the winning goal with 5.6 seconds to go. They come in on a 5-game winning streak. Right now they're holding the third spot in their division, which is a playoff spot. So he's got them in pretty good shape.
That'll be fun tonight.
It's probably doesn't hurt the Hawks that it's the second game of. back-to-back for Minnesota, for Florida, rather, because they played last night. Probably got into town very, very late.
Okay, that sounds good so far. From 217, hey, Bob, what about the Chicago Police Department lieutenant who used to do movie reviews and restaurant reviews for you? Surely Dean Richards wouldn't object. Yeah, you're talking about Lieutenant David Haynes. He was with us Friday. He's going to be with us on Friday. He's talking about food, restaurants, and maybe a little bit on the movies. Because, you know, we don't want to aggravate Dean. My goal here is to not aggravate anybody. That's all I'm trying to do here for 4 hours every morning. And finally, this from 815. Your show is like a Jethro Tull album, living in the past. So boring. Next, you will be talking about 16-inch softball. Well, you're wrong. I talked about that last week. Just looking at the Baseball Hall of Fame ballot that Dave Annett mentioned a few minutes ago. And debuting on the ballot this year, Paul Konerko, Alfonso Soriano, also, let's see, Adam Dunn, and Bobby Abreu, Jason Giambi, Derek Jeter, and Cliff Lee are among the players who will make their Hall of Fame ballot debut in 2020, along with those names I just mentioned. They're going to announce the results of the 2020 Hall of Fame balloting at 5 p.m. Chicago time. So that's coming up tonight. They'll do that on the MLB Network. Baseball Hall of Fame. And as we've been mentioning, a big night tonight in Chicago with Coach Q returning to the United Center. Looking forward to that. And, of course, you'll hear all of that right here on WGN Radio. Story that caught our eye in the Tribune today. This is very interesting. Have you been to the dentist lately for an x-ray or been to your doctor for an x-ray? You know, they put that apron on you, the lead apron.
I just did this yesterday.
Well,
I had my x-rays.
Yeah, everything okay, I hope?
Yep, yeah, that, so right. Far. Yeah, I did my gum check and everything. I'm okay.
Oh, dental x-rays.
Okay. Yes,
well, you know,
yes,
dental. They put the lead apron on.
Yep, I had that.
And listen to this. Patients have come to expect a technician to drape their torsos with a heavy lead apron when they get an x-ray, but new thinking among radiologists and medical physicists is upending that decades-old practice of shielding patients from radiation. Some hospitals are ditching the ritual of covering reproductive organs and fetuses during imaging exams after prominent medical and scientific groups have said it's a feel-good measure that can actually impair the quality of diagnostic tests and sometimes inadvertently increase a patient's radiation exposure. The about-face is intended to improve care, but it will require a major effort to reassure regulators, healthcare workers, and the public that it's better not to shield. This is a report from Kaiser Health News. Fear of radiation is entrenched in the collective psyche, and many people are surprised to learn that shielding can cause problems. The movement also has yet to gain much traction among dentists whose offices perform more than half of all x-rays. There's this big psychological component not only with patients but with staff, according to one medical physicist at the University of Colorado. And this physicist spoke about shielding at a December forum at the annual meeting of the Radiological Society of North America. How do you approach something that is so deeply ingrained in the minds of the healthcare community and the minds of patients? So this is something we'll be hearing about, I think, in the days ahead, because some hospitals are saying that the lead aprons do more harm than good. And we've all had the lead aprons, and we all feel like, okay, it's a good thing I have this on, but...
Okay, great. So I was over-radiated yesterday because I had the lead apron on.
I don't know. You gotta wait for the next study. We'll see what happens.
Yeah,
with
the
that.
Counteractive study, of course.
Right, exactly. I have talked about this for a long time. I want to do a study on studies, and get into like who pays for studies. And go back and look at studies and study their accuracy. My study on studies. You watch for that coming soon. I'm sure everybody will be talking about that. Later on today, we mentioned that we'll be talking about social media with our pal Scott Kleinberg, and he's going to be talking about how to scrub your social media. People who are looking for jobs are mindful now that future employers are checking out your posts, maybe Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and you know you don't want that that picture of you dancing naked at the office party on social media if somebody's going to hire you. And Scott's going to be talking about scrubbing social media. There's a story out today about social media and teens that's kind of interesting. And I mean, you, this is no surprise that when social media is too much, some teens tune out. That's the headline on this. While Instagram and the like are key to keeping up with friends, some high schoolers admit that they often need a break. So even the kids are saying it's too much. Also catching our eye this morning, Uber testing a new feature that gives some drivers the ability to set their fares. They're doing this in California. It's the latest in a series of moves to give them more autonomy in response to California's new gig economy law. Starting this morning, out there, drivers who ferry passengers from airports in Santa Barbara, Palm Springs, and Sacramento can charge up to five times the fare Uber sets on a ride. According to somebody involved in developing the feature, Uber confirmed in a statement that it is doing an initial test that would give drivers more control over the rates they charge riders. Gradually, those Uber and Lyft prices are going up, and pretty soon the cabbies are going to be operating on a even playing field, right? And Tesla is aiming to replicate their China success with a German factory. Business headline this morning about Elon Musk pulling off opening a brand new car factory in China with breakneck speed, sending Tesla's shares to record heights. That's a report today. And the global stock drop amid the outbreak of the deadly virus in China also in the business news today. The global stocks dropped, led by Asian markets, and the concerns are revolving around the rapid spread of that potentially deadly pneumonia-like virus you've been hearing about that originated in central China, and airports are screening passengers because of that outbreak. And the weather department, this is like a bad joke. They're talking about another snowstorm coming this weekend. Actually, they're talking about some wet snow and rain overnight on Thursday night into Friday morning. So now it might be the Friday morning rush hour, not the Friday evening rush hour, that gives us problems. And then wet snow going into Saturday morning. Well, at least the temperatures will be okay. We're talking about the 30s after we get through today, where we'll be in the 20s most of the day. Our phone number here and our text number is the same. It's 312-981-7200. If you want to email us, it's bobshow@wgnradio.com. And coming up, we'll get to extremely local news. We'll talk to our pal Jen Sabella, the director of strategy and the co-founder of Block Club Chicago. She'll be along this morning at about 7:18 or so, talk about what's going on in your neighborhood. And then, as we mentioned, Scott Kleinberg on social media will do that at about 7:40 this morning. And later on today, Coach Jeremy Colleton will talk to us. We'll get to him right before 9 o'clock this morning and get his opinion on the big night tonight over at the UC. And, Dave, I was reading about Coach Q's coming back tonight. And, boy, you really forget that he's the winningest coach in Hawks history, but the second winningest in NHL history. Unbelievable.
He had a lot of milestones along the way. 916 wins, I think he's got. He's got three Stanley Cups. He was part of another Stanley Cup winning team as well before he came to Chicago. So no doubt a Hockey Hall of Famer in the future, and it'll be good to see him. And I'm sure, as the Blackhawks have said, they'll be glad to see him. They'll welcome him back, but they want to win the
game.
Of
course they do. 452 wins in his column for Coach Q. Not bad. The news coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Good morning. It is seconds away from 10 after 7. Who is buying Super Bowl tickets so far? Well, Chicago is number 2 in the country. Fans from New York are buying 12.2% of the tickets, while people from Chicago are purchasing 8.1% of the available seats. Boston is next with 5.4%, and then Dallas, rounding out the top 5 in terms of the geographical ticket buyers.
Why? I just don't get that.
We don't have the analysis yet. We just have the numbers. The game is set. Ticket prices now being sold at a very expensive rate. According to SeatGeek, the current average price of a Super Bowl ticket, $9,500. The current lowest ticket price is $5,700, while the largest is $70,000 if you're looking to attend the game in Miami. The ticket prices for this year's Super Bowl are higher than they have ever been. The next highest price Super Bowl was when New England faced Philadelphia. That average ticket price was $5,300. The geographical aspect of ticket buyers, they say, is very interesting. Obviously, it's not surprising that Kansas City residents are currently purchasing 12.3% of the available tickets. So New York just behind them with 12.2. StubHub also has tickets listed for an exorbitant amount. The cheapest ticket there being sold for $4,600. The most expensive, $20,925. The opening ticket numbers are going to be sold at very high amounts as fans try to take advantage of the tickets being in demand. However, it is very possible that the average ticket prices will decline as the Super Bowl draws closer.
By the way, if you want to save a few bucks on travel, the city is hosting a big event next month, the NBA All-Star Game.
That's right.
And here are a couple seats on the secondary market, Bob. Let's see. These tickets are priced at $10,450, 100 level at the United Center.
You know, my daughter's been asking me about that.
She well, here you go.
Yeah, no problem. Man, oh, man. The NBA All-Star Game is coming in next month, right?
Middle of February.
Yeah, okay.
So you have the Rising Stars Challenge, with the kids, there's a celebrity game. You got the slam dunk, the skills competition. Some of it's going to be a Wintrust Arena, and the All-Star Game itself will be at the United Center.
That's a big deal for the city.
It is a very big deal.
Yeah,
and it's just about a month away.
It's Bob Surratt in charge of the radio station until all the managers get in at about 9. Let's check in with the Block Club Chicago folks. Jen Sabella is here with extremely local news this morning. How you doing, Jen?
Good. How are you, Bob?
Good. Anxious to hear the coyote story of the day. What's the latest?
So the coyote that was responsible for biting a 6-year-old boy in Lincoln Park, I think we all heard a lot about that last week. Animal Care and Control was able to capture him, and they did a DNA test to figure out if he was the coyote who bit the boy, and he was. And it's really uncommon for coyotes to attack people. It's not a thing that they do, and it turns out the coyote had been shot by someone with a BB gun. So when the little boy ran up to him, he was just scared and reacted accordingly.
So they say at some point the coyote was shot with a BB, and who knows when, right?
Right, and he'd been limping around, and that's how they were able to track him down. They were like, "It's the limping coyote," and he had an injury. He'd been shot in his chest, so. Yeah, Animal Care and Control has not said yet. They still have him in their custody. They haven't said yet what they're going to do with him. But all the animal experts say, just if you see the coyotes, just leave them alone. They really don't want anything to do with people. They actually keep rats and other vermin out of the city. They're good for the ecosystem in general. So until people mess with them. Also, feeding them can cause this behavior as well. If they are used to being able to come up to people and get food, and then somebody does something mean to them, they may react that way. So the human interference aspect is why the coyote bit it's a little boy.
Yeah, it's always us. We messed everything
up.
Yeah, the experts say not only is it rare for a coyote to bite, but rare to for a coyote to even approach somebody.
Exactly. Yeah, they'll want to stay far away from people.
Let's talk about this parent university that's been created. What's this all about?
So on the west side, they've been doing a lot of, there's a lot of organizations doing a lot of wraparound services. So we talk a lot about anti-violence measures and better schools for kids, but rarely do we talk about parents and parental support in these communities. So the Holy Ministry Family School, it is a Catholic school on the west side. They started a parent academy where they invite all the parents of their students in to do things like financial literacy lessons and like how to open a bank account, how to save for your kids' college education, just basic money management skills that some of the parents are young, some of the parents, you know, come from backgrounds where they just didn't get this kind of education. And it also just empowers them to like meet other parents in the neighborhood. So if they're a family that doesn't have a lot of friends with kids, they're able to connect with parents in the community. And it was so successful, their January 11th event, they're going to be opening it up to the whole neighborhood moving forward. So there'll be more events to come, Holy Ministry Family School, and they'll also like teach you how to get your kids to excited about reading at home and just like some skills that it, you know, it's good for everyone. There's no handbook on being a perfect parent.
Where are they located?
They are in North Lawndale, the Holy Trinity Family School.
Good idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
Now, this is a trend that I've missed. What's going on? Heated igloos?
This is like the most Midwestern thing ever. When it's so cold, but you don't want to be boxed up in your house all the time. I actually was driving around Logan Square where I live, and I noticed all of these igloos on parking lots of some restaurants around the area. And our reporter Mina Bloom looked into it. And there's a company called Thunderdomes, and they rent out these heated igloos that restaurants or businesses can put out so people can be outside. And they're heated, and they could set up like a cozy little, they could put some plants in there and some couches and have like a little VIP outdoor experience for their diners. So Middlebrow Bungalow, which is an incredible pizza place in Logan Square and Armitage. Highly recommend it. Some of the best bread I've also ever eaten. And they have great beer, too. They're at 2840 West Armitage. They've set up a little igloo outside, and you can go and order pizza and have some beers in there. It's a small igloo, so I have a feeling it'll be in demand.
So are restaurants able to put these in spaces where in the summer they have outdoor cafes?
Exactly. So if they take their patio space, they're like, well, this isn't doing anything for us right now. Actually, Middlebrow had Christmas trees stored there for a while. So they moved the Christmas trees out, moved the igloo in, making use of that space outside when it's cold out.
Fun.
Yeah. Pilot Project in Logan Square also has that. And Pilot Project's really cool, too. They have, basically, they are a tap room for brewers that don't have breweries. So they're home brewers and really, really small scale brewers. So you can go there and try beers, really local beers from somebody down the street. And yeah, you can have them in a heated igloo.
And you can also have mushrooms in Logan Square, too.
Yes, I have a lot of Logan Square stories today. Yeah, four-star mushrooms started by a young man named Joe Weber. His dad was an entrepreneur, and he went to school for biology, and he decided, you know, I'm going to try my hand at growing mushrooms. Growing mushrooms can be really complicated, but if you grow them from spawn, it's called, which are like mushroom spores, you can grow them 24/7, 365, anywhere. So you don't need sun, you don't need the heat, you just need a space with some, a dark space with some, a lot of moisture, and you can grow these mushrooms. So Joe Weber started Four Star Mushrooms. He's growing them out of his basement in Logan's, out of a basement in Logan Square. He's looking to go move into a bigger space and bring mushrooms to chefs all around the city. So they're literally picked the same day that the chefs get them, and they can cook them, and that really excites local chefs those really fresh ingredients.
Yeah, right. You know, I used to make sauteed mushroom sandwiches. That was my single guy's meal, my go-to meal all the time.
Sounds delicious and healthy.
Yes. Who knew? All right, there you go. Extremely local news, a little neighborhood news from Block Club Chicago and Jen Sabella. Thanks for the update, Jen.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. It's 7:25. I have a couple minutes here before our 7:30 news, and I wanted to ask you something, Dave, about the Baseball Hall of Fame. I know tonight around 5 p.m., I guess, Chicago time, they announced the results of the 2020 Hall of Fame balloting. Do you have any predictions on who's going in? I see on the list of former players returning to the ballot, on the top of the list, well, you have Curt Schilling and Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, Larry Walker, mm-hmm. Omar Vizquel, Manny Ramirez. Who do you think is going to get the
ballot? Well, I think the only sure bet is that Derek Jeter gets in. He's a first-timer on the ballot.
And, right.
And it seems pretty much to be the consensus that he will make it. But it's interesting because there's some guys from the steroid era who have been gaining support, and that the opposition appears to be weakening a little bit towards them, guys like Bonds, Roger Clemens. So I would think of those guys that it would be those two would have maybe the best shot to break through. There's all kinds of surveys. Some people release their vote after they send in their ballot, and so mm-hmm. you've got a number of websites that try to poll the voters and figure out who's getting in, and it appears that they're pretty close. And the other guy is Larry Walker, former outfielder for the Rockies, who's on the ballot for the last time, and he hasn't come necessarily all that close, but he appears to have picked up some support this year. So, but Jeter looks to be the only shoe-in right now.
And Sosa isn't going anywhere, right? I mean,
again,
he had like 8.5%.
He's got a long way to go.
Time.
He's got a long way to go.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I also see first year for Paul Konerko and Adam Dunn, and let's see who else. Oh, Alfonso Soriano on the list now.
Yeah, I'm not sure that Alfonso Soriano is going to make the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I could be out on a limb there, but
I think you're right, though.
He's a solid, a solid major league player, but there are lots of solid major league players.
Yeah, you're right about the thinking, I think, changing as far as the steroid users. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you wonder, too, how this whole cheating scandal now is going to affect the way the baseball writers think about the voting.
No, I think it will have an impact, and I think that, I guess if there's enough bad stuff there, you have to pick out the least bad stuff.
Yeah,
right. Don't you?
And if you look at the Hall of Fame rules, and you look at the requirements for somebody entering the Hall, character is part of it.
I mean,
they do go into that. And, of course, there's a lot of talk now about, well, Pete Rose, get him in there now, right?
Right, but it doesn't appear that that still is
a ways
off. But I do think that people have softened in their opposition to that idea from where it was, say, 10 years ago.
Right.
And I think this the same with the steroid guys.
Right.
You know, maybe Sammy Sosa will get in someday.
A few years ago, I finally made it to Cooperstown for the first time, and what a great little town that is. I mean, I think I enjoyed walking around those little stores and the village there as much as I enjoyed being in the museum, in the actual Hall of Fame. It's really something every baseball fan should
see. Absolutely. It's a definite destination. It's not cheap. to walk around that town.
No, it isn't.
And go find a replica jersey of a Hall of Famer and see how much you know what you're talking about, the prices for the Super Bowl tickets.
Yeah.
Not far off.
Yeah. No, I know.
But it's a great museum, and they've upgraded a lot too and updated it quite a bit in recent years.
Oh, have they? Mm-hmm. Really? I'll have to go back there. It's a beautiful part of the country. And you mentioned the jerseys. I remember, like, years and years ago, buying some jerseys, and I would play softball in them, you know, and then all of a sudden they became collector's items. It wasn't always that way.
No. Well, the whole collectible thing has gotten.
Yeah.
I don't think you want to be out there playing softball in some of those.
No. And you understand why some of the ball players now are either reluctant or think twice about all the signing, because it's a business, and they're contributing to a business. All right, we'll talk about the business of social media coming up and how you may want to scrub your old Facebook posts and alter your Google searches if you're looking for a job. A story in the Trib yesterday really caught our eye. According to a survey by CareerBuilder, 70% of employers use social media to screen candidates before hiring. And with us to talk about that and more is Scott Kleinberg, our old pal from Chicago here. He used to write the So Social syndicated column at the Trib, and now is social media and engagement manager at Investment News in New York. How you doing, Scott?
I'm great, Bob. How are you doing?
Good, and interested in this story about how important social media is if you're looking for work. It's just as important as a resume now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really, really important. And the funny thing about this is not funny, but I've been writing about this for years, that, you know, the resume is what, you know, is always your public face of everything. You send it to an employer, they look at it, and, you know, they make a decision from there. But there's so much more going on behind the scenes. And every day that goes by with a new social media platform that goes by, there's always an opportunity to find out more about you.
And when someone who is looking at a prospective employee starts Googling you, what are they looking for exactly?
They want to know if you're going to be a fit. They want to know if you're trustworthy. They want to know if you're company material. They just want to know a little bit more about you, because, you know, you've had all of this time, like we were talking about with resumes. You have all this time to write this resume. Now it's like, you know, here's what everybody else sees. Here's how you are viewed to the world. And, you know, in a lot of cases, you know, people actually Google themselves, and they find a lot more about that they didn't even know was out there.
The statistic that was in this story yesterday is really amazing. Yeah. About the employers surveyed who said they chose not to hire a candidate based on content found on their social media accounts.
Yeah. I mean, you think what happens is, you know, you think that whatever you post is your opinion, and you think that you can post whatever you want. And maybe you posted something 10 years ago that you completely forgot about. But someone who's really looking into you and doing their job to figure out, you know, who exactly you are, they might be able to find that. And, you know, they bring it back up, and it's like, oh, wait a minute, I posted that, but it doesn't matter. You actually posted it. So, yeah, I mean, that could really make or break a job for you.
54% of employers surveyed said they chose not to hire someone based on content found on social media. Let's take a quick break, and then Scott will talk about, among other things, how social media can help you. We've been talking with our social media expert, Scott Kleinberg, about how social media can be a problem if you've got some stuff posted that is embarrassing and you're looking for a job. But social media can also help. Tell us how, Scott.
Actually, it turns out that 44% of hiring managers actually have used the information they found to actually hire the person. Things like your background supports your resume, you have great communication skills, because you can tell that when you're sharing on social media. Something as simple as your profile photo looking really, really strong and professional, or something that shows creativity. Like in my line of work, you know, as a social media manager, I'm looking for people who are smart and say smart things, and that can help me figure that out as well.
Mm. So as far as the social media profile is concerned, is it a good idea to get rid of it altogether?
No, no, you definitely don't want to get rid of it altogether, and I'll tell you why. That's a huge red flag. If I'm hiring someone, the first thing that I do is I Google them. I look for their social media profiles. Now, not at the point where I want to find out the information that's on them. I just want to know that they're there. If you search for somebody on Google right now in 2020 and you don't find any social media profiles, you're going to wonder why that person doesn't. And that's all you're going to wonder. And I think that that's going to cloud your judgment. So you definitely don't want to get rid of everything. Keep the ones that, you know, are important. Keep your LinkedIn, obviously. Keep your Twitter. But Facebook, you know, you don't have to necessarily share your Facebook with the world. Facebook, for a lot of people, is just for family and friends. Same for Instagram. I mean, a lot of people, like myself, I like to post city skylines and fun things like that. But a lot of people just want to make Instagram personal, and therefore they can make their Instagram private.
So I know you've written about this before. Your social media, you want to look at that as your resume, don't you?
Yes, yes, you absolutely do. Because if you think about it, like we were saying before, resume, one page, two page, social media. Now, for me, social media goes back to 2008. Boy, I'm old. So, you know, 12 years, you know, and it's a long time to keep track of everything that's going on, which is why this story is so important. You can't possibly know what you've posted over 12 years. It would be very, very difficult to keep track of all of those things, but it really follows you everywhere. You can find out how much of a person, how much you've changed, you know, professionally and personally in that amount of time.
Now, not in terms of your particular position there, because you're looking for social media folks, but generally, if you don't have a social media presence at all, how much does that hurt you in the job market?
It's not going to hurt you if there's no, I don't believe that there is an employer out there that's just going to absolutely skip over you if you have no presence whatsoever. I don't think it's going to help. I think it's one of those things, though, in an interview where you go in, you talk about those things and you say, you know, I choose to keep my personal life private, which is an absolutely perfect thing to do. But that is a really good argument right there for making sure that your LinkedIn is up to speed. If I Google someone and their LinkedIn comes up, that's really all I'm looking for. Everything else, the Twitter, the Facebook, the Instagram, that's all stuff that we can talk about later. LinkedIn at least tells me that I have a professional background, a professional profile, professional headshots so people can see what I look like and they know that I'm a real person.
I finally got on LinkedIn, although I still don't have a picture. I guess I should, shouldn't I?
You should have a picture. Everybody's called different things on different platforms. It used to be if you didn't have a picture on Twitter, you were called an egg. And then because it was just a picture of an egg, and then they changed it to like this empty head kind of thing. So I think you have enough good pictures where you could probably find something for yourself.
I'm going to put my bar mitzvah picture in there.
There you go.
What about making your social media profile private?
That is something that you should definitely consider if it's something that you feel you'll be comfortable with. It's like Instagram is the best example of that. Like I was saying, you know, I like to do, you know, really nice photos of cities and things like that. And there are people that don't do that. There are people that want to have an outlet for doing things. I'm not saying bad things, but just an outlet that maybe they don't want people to see other things. That is totally fine to have a private profile. And I really don't think that there's going to be an employer out there that's going to question somebody for having a private profile. I think most people realize that there is a separation between personal and work. You just have to be careful on how you portray it.
If your profile is private, is there a way around it? Can somebody still look at it?
No. If a profile is truly private, there's no way to see it. You would have to request to follow that person, so the person would get a notification saying Bob is looking to follow you, and then they could make the decision of whether they want to. Now, something with Facebook, it's a little bit different because Facebook has public and friend posts. So if you post something just for friends, a public person would never see it. But if you make the mistake and post it public, there's a chance that it could be posted. But luckily, Facebook gives you all kinds of ways to default to a certain thing and say, I'm only going to share with friends or I'm only going to share with the public.
And there are very simple things you can do that make an impact quickly. Give us a few tips on that.
One of those things is your social media bio, that first thing that pops up that says who you are. Make sure that bio is up to date. Make sure it looks like you didn't write it in 2008. Let's look at it that way. Also, make sure, like you just hit on, make sure you're your bio photos, your profile photos show up. Because when people don't see a photo, they wonder why a photo isn't there. So those are quick things you can do. And, you know, maybe if you haven't posted for a while on a social account, let's take Twitter, for example, you haven't posted in 6 months. So someone looks at it and it looks a little bit dated. Post something just current event-wise. Just post something that you're passionate about. Just put something up quickly so it looks like you still have an active presence.
So the bottom line in all this is employers are really paying attention to this, aren't they?
They're paying attention because it's natural curiosity to find out more about the person. The person gets your resume, gets your information, and says, oh, okay, let's look into this person. And the process becomes, you know, who is this person that we're about to hire? Why should we hire this person? And, yeah, that's exactly right. They're looking, and you have to be prepared for them looking.
Scott Kleinberg, social media and engagement manager at Investment News. And Scott, do you make house calls or answer questions at any rate if somebody wants to get in touch with you on social media?
Honestly, if you want to reach out to me on social media, I'm pretty much at Scott Kleinberg everywhere. I'm on Twitter. If someone wants to ask me a question on Twitter, I am always happy to answer a question. So certainly.
Yeah, you're the best. Thanks, as always. Thanks, Scott. Bob. Good talking to you. We'll check in with you again next week.
Sounds great, Bob.
I'll get a picture on LinkedIn if I can figure out how to do that. If not, I'll email you.
Perfect. I'll answer you.
Okay. 7:55 right now. Coming up after 8 o'clock, oh, I think you're going to like this. And I think once in a while we may do this because I've been moving into a new office here, cleaning up some stuff, and I've come across a lot of old tapes, a lot of old audio clips, and I found one of Jack Brickhouse doing a Bears-Packers game. And coming up, I think, at about 8:40 or so this morning, I'll play this for you. It's very amusing. And, you know, I mean, for a lot of us, Brickhouse and Kupcinet doing Bears on WGN, that's how we grew up around here. And when you hear Jack doing football, he was great. I thought he was fantastic. Where do you hear this clip?
Yeah, I've actually got a stack of some of those tapes hidden away.
No, bring them out, because I think I'm going to start doing this from time to time on the show with some of the old audio I find from different sources. I think we'll just call it Bob Surratt's Dumpster of Memories, and then okay. we'll share those with you. We got to get to work on a fancy produced open for the segment, but we'll try it out today at about 8:40 or so.
Sounds good.
Yeah, and this particular clip I think is from 1968, and it's a Bears-Packers game. I thought it'd be timely, and you'll hear some of the names, and it's kind of fun. Kind of fun to do that. Coming up, we'll get the entertainment report and the update on Prince Harry and Meghan. Beyonce also in the news, and so is Jamie Foxx right after this news. It's 8:11. Dean Richards is off this week, but Alicia Quarles, the senior news correspondent for Daily Mail TV, is keeping us informed on the entertainment beat. And Alicia, I have a confession to make. I watched 5 minutes of The Bachelor last night.
Oh, this is shocking. What made you do that?
I was flipping around, and I saw that they were having a pool party. So I decided to check it out for a while. It looks so phony to me. It looks like they're all paid actors.
A little bit. But, you know, after all these seasons, all of us get into it. So this is kind of a storyline trip. But I'm just impressed that you tuned in, even if it was for 5 minutes.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I thought, well, it's cold out. Let me go to a pool party. All right, let's begin with the update on the royal couple. Or do we call them the formerly royal couple now?
The formerly royal couple, since they can't use their titles anymore. Well, the update is that Harry had gone over there to the UK on some last-minute, I guess, time that loose ends up on royal business. And he's already back in Canada. He's now with Archie and his wife, Meghan. They're staying on Vancouver Island in a multi-million-dollar mansion. It's also where they spent Thanksgiving. And he was all smiles. He arrived late last night. Meghan's been staying with their two dogs, their baby. They've still got security around them, but looks like they're adjusting to civilian life.
Do you think that they're actually going to be making more money with this new arrangement than they would have had they not broken off from the official royal family?
Yeah, they absolutely will now make more money. So Harry's private money basically comes from Princess Diana's estate and also some money that Prince Charles has given him. So he's worth about $40 million. They're not hurting. But now they can go on book tours. They can do speaking engagements, and they can keep this money. None of it has to go to the people, even though the people were supporting them. They're absolutely going to make more money.
Yeah, well, no tag days for them. Let's talk about Jersey Shore's Jen Harley now. What's going on with Jen?
Yeah, so Jen is actually the ex-girlfriend of Ronnie Ortiz, the original Jersey Shore member. These two got together, they have a baby together, and they're just hot messes. She was recently arrested on January 11th. She allegedly broke into his home, and now she's being charged with assault with eyeliner. You heard that correctly?
What? Give me that again. What?
Assault with eyeliner.
Okay.
So Ronnie alleges that when she broke into the home, she then attacked him and tried to gouge his eyes out with eyeliner after she saw another girl's makeup in there. She says, wait a minute, it wasn't a breakup because I still have a key. She's now ordered to stay 100 yards away from him until February 25th. So this is just a mess.
It's official now. It's the end of civilization as we know it. Hang on, Alicia. We want to get to Beyonce, Jamie Foxx, and the Grammys momentarily.
For news at 10, watch WGN. Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV news at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
We are continuing on the entertainment beat this morning with Alicia Quarles from Daily Mail TV. Dean Richards is off this week. Let's talk about Beyonce taking some heat for her clothing line, I guess, right, Alicia?
She is, yes. So she did a capsule collection, her Ivy Park collection with Adidas, and it sold out within a day over the weekend. But of course, people are upset because she did not sell any sizes past an extra large. Now, the average American woman is a size 16. An extra large in Adidas is a 16 to 18. And so people are saying, for Beyonce, someone who's been so inclusive in the past with bigger background dancers and all about, you know, being body positive, people were upset that she didn't include a lot of, you know, women in there that can fit those sizes. But I will say the collection is gender neutral, so that was a step in the right direction.
How much is Beyonce making on this?
Multi-millions. Oh, but, you know, to your point, everybody's saying she left a lot of money on the table because she left out a whole group of people. If you look at Rihanna's Fenty line, Savage line, her clothing line, it's, you know, it goes on to really big sizes. But Beyonce can't win, can't lose. But she's making millions, so she's laughing all the way at the bank, I think.
Yep. All right, let's get to Jamie Foxx now and what's going on with him and his divorced parents.
Well, they're divorced, but I think this is a kind of new age divorce because the parents have been divorced for 25 years. They both live with Jamie Foxx on his property. But check this out. Even though they've been divorced for 25 years, they've lived in the same house for the last 12 years. And Jamie says things can get interesting between his parents, Daryl and Louise. He says Daryl still dates and brings his dates to the house, and Louise will go talk to them and check them out. So he says it actually makes for a new age, kind of hilarious situation.
Modern Family.
Modern family. Nothing wrong with it.
Should I know everything about Christina Milian? Should I know who this is?
Not really. So Christina Milian, if you're of a certain age, you know who she is. She's a pop star. But a lot of people are excited for her because she just had a baby with her French pop star fiance, Matt Peroka. So she was in Love Don't Cost a Thing, movies that, you know, people younger than me really enjoyed. But she just had a little boy, so we're just saying mazel to her.
Okay. By the way, I'm just looking at some texts we're getting about our entertainment news today, especially talking about Prince Harry and Meghan. Somebody from 414 wrote, so Harry is staying in a multi-million-dollar home on a private island, just being a normal guy, I guess, huh? He'll never be just a normal guy, will he?
He'll never be just a normal guy. He does have multi-millions, so I guess that's what you do when you're a multi-millionaire.
Guess so. And the Grammys are Sunday night. Alicia Keys hosting, and they keep announcing new performers. Who is the latest to be scheduled to appear?
Well, the latest scheduled to appear, Lizzo will perform on the Grammy stage for the first time, as will Billie Eilish. Also, we'll have Demi Lovato taking the stage. And, of course, this is a week ahead of her Super Bowl performance, which will sing the national anthem. We've got Blake Shelton and Gwen Stefani, who came out with a new music video today. And of course, we already talked about Aerosmith, the Jonas Brothers, Brandy and Steve. So this should be, Tyler, the Creator, this should be a good one.
There you go. And what's on the docket for today? What are you going to be watching for today, Alicia, as far as Daily Mail TV? We'll be watching the show on Channel 9 at 3 this afternoon. What's up?
Thank you very much. So we're going to keep talking about Beyonce, expanding upon that reporting. I've got some sources in to find out why they didn't go past that bigger size. And then you asked me about the story yesterday about Deborah Dugan, who's the president of the Recording Academy, the Grammys, and that whole controversy. She stepped down, but nobody really knows the full story. So we're doing some investigating into that. And, of course, it wouldn't be Daily Mail TV without covering more of your favorite Prince Harry and Meghan.
That's right. And maybe a little bit on the pool party from The Bachelor.
Of course. Just for you. I got it. Just for you.
All right. Thanks, Alicia. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, have a good day. A little item in sports I didn't get a chance to talk to Dave Ennett about earlier. I wanted to mention interesting Paul Sullivan column in the Tribune today suggesting that maybe the Astros should hire as their new manager Dusty Baker.
Yeah,
kind of makes sense. He's not really doing much now, is he? I don't think he's 70 now, and he's available.
Yeah, I mean, and he's had. So look, you look at his record, and I know at the end Cubs fans were ready to see him go, but I think if you look at his body of work as a manager, having guided the Giants to a World Series, gotten the Cubs close to a World Series, and the other places he's gone, Cincinnati and Washington, you know, there were a lot of people before the Nationals got hot at the beginning of last year were ruining the fact that they had let Dusty go and replaced him with Davey Martinez. Ended up working out okay for him. But, yeah, I mean, I would think he'd be a guy that if you want someone to come in, it's a team that's going to have a lot of issues going into next season. It's going to be a very tough year, I would think, for the Houston Astros.
But as Paul Sullivan points out in his column, Baker managed Barry Bonds and Sammy Sosa during the prime of their alleged steroid-fueled careers. He coined the term steroid McCarthyism. And he was in the middle of the famous feud between Cubs players and broadcaster Steve Stone and Chip Carey.
Yeah.
I'm still mad at him for not getting off his butt and walking to the mound to calm Pryor down during that mess in 2003. He never came out to the mound, did he?
No.
He never settled him down.
Ever. Oh, there were a lot of things that kind of went wrong at that point.
Yeah, I know.
But I think his handling of the whole thing with who was it? Kent Merker and Stone and those and Chip Carey.
Yeah,
as the manager, he should have been more involved in that, or you know, somehow that situation should have been diffused.
Right.
But that said, I still maintain you look at his body of work, and he's been knocked for not being a good handler of pitchers. But there are a lot of managers you can say that about.
Sure. Sully writes in his column, Baker still plays the role of anti-hero better than most managers and hasn't slowed down at 70. With Joe Maddon in Anaheim and Baker in Houston, could you imagine how interesting those Astros-Angels series would be?
Oh, yeah.
That'd be fun. All right, coming up here, a couple of things. We'll talk to Blackhawks coach Jeremy Colleton, and tonight's a big night with Coach Q returning. And I heard Jeremy talking about this earlier. He's really looking forward to it, and he says that Quenneville's one of the reasons he's in Chicago.
Yep, but he's also looking forward to getting a win.
Yeah, they need every win they can get. And then they go on a long break after tonight, right?
Long break, and they don't play many home games now for like the next month. They play, they play a week from Saturday at Arizona, Bob, and then, they play a home game against Boston, which will be tough. Then they go on like a six or seven game road trip, I think. So, this is a challenging part of the schedule for them. They're on a nice run now. Let's see if they can keep it going.
And in addition to that, we'll get to Coach Jeremy Colleton at about 8:40 this morning. After our 8:30 news, from our dumpster of memories, I've got something I think you'll enjoy, a WGN radio broadcast of a Bears-Packers game from 1968. And who doesn't like to hear Jack Brickhouse?
You're
going to
hear
again?
The whole game?
Yep, that's right. I've decided to play the whole game, give John Williams a day off. I don't think the Cup is actually in this clip, but Brickhouse is, and it's fun to hear him doing the game. So you won't get any That's Right Jacks, but you'll get all the rest and hear some great names from 1968. And I think from time to time, as I'm moving into the new office here and coming across some old tapes, some from the sports world, some from the music world, we'll play them here and just call it the dumpster of memories. And that way I can clean up the office and use these tapes that have been sitting in a file for forever. So,
could I make a suggestion?
No, sure, please.
Maybe rethink the name a little bit.
You think that's too negative?
Yeah, I mean.
All right. Okay, I'll work on that. Yeah, maybe you're right. I say that in fun, the dumpster.
Oh, I know you. I know you do, but.
It could be taken the wrong way.
Maybe the treasure trove of memories.
Yeah, that's better. There's a better ring to it. A reminder, if you'd like to voice your opinion here, you can call us or text us at the same number, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We have the email set up now. If you want to talk to any of us, get in touch with any of us here in the studio, in the newsroom, on the traffic desk, the weather desk, the sports desk, bobshow@wgnradio.com will accomplish that. And it's not Bob's show, it's just Bob's show. There's BS in the middle there. That's how you'll remember it. bobshow@wgnradio.com. Got it? Okay, let's get you caught up on everything going on, including this cold, cold morning. A lot of sunshine, but not much heat. And we have some traffic info and sports and all the rest of the news on the way. And then the vault of treasured audio clips.
There you go.
Thank you, Dave. And I thought it'd be fun to hear an old Bears-Packers game, or at least a clip of Jack Brickhouse describing the action on WGN Radio from 1968. Do you remember when the home games were often blacked out? There was no television?
Oh, sure. They had to be sold out, 72 hours in advance, I think?
Right. And then many times Wally Phillips would buy the tickets, mm-hmm. remember, and then donate them to charity or something.
The Neediest Kids Fund.
Then the games would be televised. Yeah. Talk about power. Here's Jack Brickhouse doing radio play-by-play of Bears-Packers from November 1968. Let's listen to a minute or so of this.
Good afternoon, football fans. I'm Jack Brickhouse, along with Eric Cuffman and Frank Bascott, saying welcome to professional football with the Chicago Bears on the WGN Chicago Bears Football Network. Today we're broadcasting direct from Lambeau Field in Green Bay, where the Bears will meet the Green Bay Packers. We'll have the kickoff in just a few minutes. Hunter Baddeley. And that's the Williams back there. Travis Williams as usual. Here's the kick by first ball, and it's dropped in the end zone by Travis Williams, and he decides to down it there. So it'll be the Packers ball. First and 10 to go on their own 20-yard line. He's running out. Here we go. Wherever you are, don't move. Don't move away from that radio. If you're driving along, leave that radio right where it is now on WGN or whatever station you're listening to on our Chicago Bears network, and leave it there, because believe me, this could be some afternoon. All right, they have Carroll Dell put away on the left. They have Boyd Dollar put away to the right. They have a deuce, a very wide deuce backfield. The Green Bay Packers, five-star quarterback. You have Fitz and Donnie Anderson in the backfield. A handoff to Anderson, sweeps around the left side, runs around John Johnson. However, he forced it to go pretty wide and deep in order to avoid his lives. And consequently, he lost a couple of yards trying to make the turn, because suddenly Lloyd Phillips of the Bears was there to down him. So the first running play by the Green Bay Packers in this ball game involves a two-yard loss. That's going to be now second down. 12 yards to go for the Green Bay Packers, who huddle back on their 5-yard line. On the defense for the Bears, as they break the huddle, we see the up-front men are Lloyd Phillips and Edel Bradovich, right and left end respectively. The interior men are John Johnson and T.B. Middle linebacker, as usual, Butkus, with Purnell on the right up on the line of scrimmage, and Doug on the left also up on the line. That gives the Bears a six-man rush.
Can you imagine someone just waking up hearing that, how disoriented they would be, thinking they're in the Twilight Zone. 1968, Jack Brickhouse on the radio describing the Bears and the Packers. And
by the way, the Bears won the game 13-10.
Oh, good.
That left them with a record of 4-4, dropped the Packers to 3-4-1. Gale Sayers, 205 yards on 24 carries in that game.
Those were the days. The Brickhouse enthusiasm is, I mean, that was incredible, wasn't it?
And I remember listening to those games him and Kupp. And,
absolutely. I can remember where I was in Albany Park in our apartment in the back room just listening to the radio, because often the games were not on television, and you'd hear that. And what's funny is that Brickhouse enthusiasm, that was the same for, say, the Cubs 1966 team that, you know, lost Lord knows how many games. You know, he always had that optimism and made you believe, well, this could be the year, right?
Mm-hmm.
that's talent right there. Time for some Chicago Blackhawks talk. And good morning, Coach Jeremy Colleton. How you doing today, Jeremy?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Good. Before I turn you over to Dave Annett, I have a question for you. Are hockey players as superstitious as athletes in other sports? Are you superstitious?
I'm not. I went through a phase when I was younger where I was, and I felt like it just was, it became a distraction. So my new superstition was to not be superstitious, and that worked for me. But I think a lot of guys do have some. I think it's just, it's like the routines, it's a way to build confidence that you are ready, and it's kind of like a security blanket. And so I think for some guys it works. My concern is that if it doesn't, if you can't set it up exactly how you want, you feel like you're not ready to go, or you can't play, so you want to avoid that wherever possible.
The reason I'm asking is a couple of Saturdays ago I took the family out to the game. We went to the United Center on that Saturday night in that bad weather. And first time I was out all year. And, of course, you had a big win. And that started the win streak. You guys haven't lost since. And I was there at that game. I'm just saying. You know what I mean? I'm just saying.
Yeah, don't minimize your effect on our winning streak. But
I won't.
Yeah. Jeremy, you used a buzzword there that I've heard from coaches in every sport, and that's distraction. And this week seems to be a week where you're dealing with some. Kane's 1,000th point the other night, great moment for you. The return of Joel Quenneville tonight. Let's back to Sunday real quickly. And if you go back 24 hours before that, Kane's on the ice late in the game in Toronto. And are you thinking there maybe he's going to get the 1,000th point there on Saturday night? Then you come home, and that's one thing that's kind of out of the way.
Yeah. Of course, we wanted to get it for him as quickly as we could. Wouldn't have surprised me if he would have got it done in Toronto. But, you know, you just, obviously nice for him to do it in front of the home fans here in Chicago, and for people to be able to share it with them. But I do think it'll be a little bit of a weight lifted from him. I don't think it was affecting him until last game, really. But now he can just get back to focus on playing.
Are you able to take in the moment in that situation, or are you already, you're focused on here's what's going to happen when play resumes?
Well, I think at that point, you know, made it 4-1. It felt pretty safe, our lead. So, yeah, it was good. It was nice. It was a good time for him to do it. And, you know, we could just have it, sort of let the players enjoy it. Everyone goes on the ice and everyone's happy. And that was good. That was good for the team and, of course, good for the fans.
After tonight, there's a big break in the schedule. Jeremy, what will you do during the time off? What do you ask the guys to do?
Well, I think it's important to use the break to decompress and get some rest physically, but most importantly, mentally. So, you know, for myself, looking forward to spending time with family and catching up with my kids during the season. There's not as much time enjoy that part of it. So definitely be doing that, and we'll have time. We'll have a few days where we're together as a team before we get playing, where we can get our motor running again. And that's, it's kind of nice with the break where I'm not too worried about what the players do. I understand, you know, they're going to make sure they get some exercise in and keep their conditioning up, but we're going to have two-fold practices before we play, so we'll be able to get them ready.
It's a big night tonight. You're facing Florida. You're going for six in a row. Joel Quenneville coming back to the United Center. We had such great success, as so many guys on this team that played for him and achieved great success for him. And, of course, you had a relationship with him as well. So what's this night going to be like for you?
Well, I mean, obviously it's a big game for our team, and we want to win. We need the points in the standings, but it's a big night for the organization, and obviously for Q. I'm sure he's been looking forward to this, since he signed with Florida, and it's an opportunity for the fans to show appreciation for all that he has done for the city and the team. So it'll be fun. It's going to be a good night. I think both sides will be ready to play, so it should be a good quality of game, and you love to be part of situations like that.
Yeah, and you got two teams that are playing well. They had a big win on the road last night at Minnesota, and they're holding a playoff spot. You're trying to get into that playoff position, and you're just 3 points away. You've talked about it with us before, the importance of getting points whenever you can. You've been doing a pretty good job of that lately, haven't you?
Yeah, well, we've been able to kind of scratch and claw our way back into striking distance, but you can't let up. Just now that we kind of can touch the pack, it's important that we continue to perform well, and we got a long break, as you guys alluded to earlier, and so we're going to have to sit on this performance for a bunch of days. So you'd love to have a good effort and preferably get 2 points so we can really enjoy the time off and then come back recharged and energized for the stretch run here.
Yeah, I think I asked you last week about Dominic Kubalik and his success, and since then, since we spoke last week, he's only added to it. Is this kind of becoming a thing where are you ever surprised by anything you see from this guy out there?
Well, I'd love to keep talking about him because it means he's continuing his little run. That's one thing I've spoken to him about, is like, this is your normal. Don't think that this is an anomaly or you're playing over your head or any of that. This is you. This is what you can do every night if you prepare, and obviously the work ethic is important, and typically he brings it all the time. So we want him to establish a minimum level that's maybe not here, but as close as possible to how he's playing now. And part of that's your mindset, like, yeah, this is who I am, and I know how to prepare each day to play my best. And it sure has been nice for our team to get that contribution from him.
I know, Coach, as you said, you're not superstitious anymore, but if things are not looking good by the second period tonight, call me. I can be at the United Center in 30 minutes or less.
Hey, I just want you to feel good about what you're doing for the team. So you just make your read.
Okay, got it. Yeah, have a good one tonight. Best of luck to you, and thanks for talking to us this morning.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
What are you, like, dominoes? I'll be there in 30 minutes.
You think he's now telling the Blackhawks upper management, I don't mind talking to Annett, but Surratt's beginning to annoy me.
No. Not,
okay.
No,
all right.
No chance.
Okay. He sounds pretty straight-laced.
Yeah, well, he's
personable, but...
Well, it's game day.
He's got his game face on already at 5 to 9 in the morning. Okay. The news is coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and so is John Williams. Okay, I'm told that Sidney Crosby has the same jock that he wore in his junior days. So apparently hockey players are just as bad as baseball players or anybody else. John Williams on the way. He's going to take things over after our 9 o'clock news. What's going on, John?
I'm literally just walking and catching up with the show. You've been talking a lot about Sidney Crosby's jock today.
That's right. The whole morning, starting at 5, that's all we did.
Dave, was this your idea? It sounds like a sports thing.
Not my idea, John.
Boy, oh boy, Dave, I thought I knew you better than that. A little better content for the morning show here. But we'll be talking about Sidney Crosby's jock on my show, too. I guess that's why I'm a little upset about that. Nothing else is going on.
That's a different audience. Don't worry.
That's right.
You can repeat it.
If you're just joining us, don't worry. We've got 3 more hours to go. Obviously, we'll follow a little bit the impeachment of the president. Boy, it's hard to imagine I'm saying that today. It won't actually start towards the end of our show, but what are you going to see? What do you need to be looking for? We'll preview it in the 11 o'clock hour today.
That's noon Chicago time.
That is noon our time, yeah. And also, I just want to catch up on some of the red light camera controversies that we've been talking about on our show. We'll have a little conversation about that today, too.
And by the way, for the folks who have been asking, this is Pat Metheny, the little going home music. And
yeah,
by the
I'm digging
way,
this, by the way.
Well, yeah, I think it's called Last Train. I'm going home to do a practice show in the basement, so I'll do better tomorrow. Thanks very much for listening. And John is coming right up. We'll see you in the morning.